show. I'm Lina Mirmont, and I'm having extraordinarily special, and I would say with exotic biography, young writer who had already quite an adventurous life with not only accomplishments, but with a tremendous excitement. I certainly would give him fullest opportunity to talk about his books, especially his last book, which called Cold Black. But I am not following the order because I didn't even pronounce his own name. And his own name is Alex Sho. And the reason I am going a bit backwards, because his life is a tremendous book in itself. So I would certainly hope that we will start from his life, which I cannot imagine did not find profound mark in his writing and a sort of inspiration. And also because, indeed, his life is such an incredible emotional bravery, I would say. And with all this suspension, which I hope created, I like to go into the, to shorten the suspense which I should created, and introduce my very dear guest, Alex Sho, and let him speak about his life. He is extraordinary, young, but very fruitful, eventful biography. Alex, you are on. Please tell us about you.
Well, thanks for such a fantastic build-up. It's nice to be called young. One of the very few people that's called me young for quite a while, so that's very nice. I don't quite know where to start. I've just released my second novel called Cold Black, and it's a follow-up to my first novel, Hetman. Cold Black took me 3 years to write, and Hetman took me, odd enough, about 12 years to write. So I'm getting faster, and now I'm trying to write the sequel. Hopefully I can write it within a year. Let's see.
Okay. Well, could we shift from your book for a moment and ask you to talk about your life, because not too many people in your young age for such a short period of time managed to be born in one country, in one culture, in one traditions, in one setting, like Great England, and then for some reason, which I hope you will tell us about, you decided to go no more, no less, to Russia, and to be more precise, you went to Ukraine, which is a separate country right now. And in this absolutely new environment, you established yourself as a head drama at the Pechersk School International in Kiev. So such a shift surely has its own legs, its own roots, and its own reasons. Let us in this journey.
Yeah, okay, I can talk about that. Fine. Yeah, basically, when I finished university, I then did a one-year course to be trained as a teacher, trained as a drama teacher. My degree previous to that was training me in how to act and how to write, act and write, and both for the television, radio, stage, and also film. And when I finally finished my teacher training, my second degree, I decided that the world was too small a place for me to stay in one place. So I decided, okay, where can I go in the world? So I contacted a local language school in my hometown of Worthing and managed to get a job teaching English to foreign students there for a few weeks. And I met quite a few contacts, and there were a couple of opportunities. One was to go to China to teach, and another one was a woman in Ukraine who wanted to start a language school. So a month later, this was in early October 1996, I flew to Ukraine, a country I knew nothing about, and didn't speak a word of it, of Russian at the time. All I could say was da, nyet, and babushka, and also
that's,
vodka.
Sorry interrupting you, but that's a lot, especially if you know how to say nyet, you in Russia.
Yeah, nyet was quite an interesting word to know. But I gradually picked up words, and on my very first day in Kiev, Ukraine, we arrived. Well, I say we. It was just myself at that time. I arrived at the house I was going to be staying in with a family who were being paid by the company I was working for, and I was told beforehand they spoke very good English. But of course, when I arrived, I found they didn't. I found one of the sons spoke English. But he worked during the day, so he wasn't in much. But the rest of the family had learned French. So luckily, I'd learned French at school myself. So for the first few weeks, I was speaking French to these people and then realizing I wasn't understanding words. But of course, the funny thing was, the words that I wasn't understanding were Russian or Ukrainian words they were using. So over time, I started to learn a few words. But also, the same day, I went to the offices of the company I worked for to meet the students I was going to be teaching. And on that very first day, I actually met the girl who was going to be my future wife. So funnily enough, I met her the very first day I arrived in the country.
Wow. That's a quite I meant to say that this is quite a cocktail of languages. And... And that produced such a fantastic personal result. And it is delightful to make a mark of your first day in a different world and feel yourself literally at home, because that was your future personal life.
Yeah, it was very strange, I'll be honest. For the first 3 weeks or so, I didn't really meet anyone else who was a native English speaker, and so I found myself speaking a very kind of basic form of English. I found myself speaking in shorter sentences. And then a friend of mine who I'd been at school with, he came over to teach with me, so we both worked at the same school. And then we worked there for a few months until I went to the British Embassy, because my friend was ill, and they told me that there was another school which they'd actually started that was looking for a teacher. And so at that time, I went to this new school, Pachurs School, and because I was a professionally trained teacher rather than just some of the local expats who kind of pretended to teach, because I was professionally trained, they decided to give me a job there and then. So I left the company I was working for, and I became head of drama at Pachurs School, and that was a really, really good experience. And by this time, my future wife and I were together. She was my girlfriend, and I started to, in between drinking vodka and teaching, trying to actually learn the language, learning to speak Russian and Ukrainian. And at that time, I was really enjoying myself in Ukraine, because it was a country before I'd known nothing about. And that was 1996, and the country had only been independent for 5 years, so everything was, was new and exciting.
Well, we certainly will have enough time to talk about your books, and I just wanted to make a bridge. I read some of the some part of your book from Black Coal chapters, and mm-hmm. It's certainly extremely intensely involved with the events which you, I believe, knew about from historic political side. And I wanted to say that there was a very high praise on the part of Kyiv Post newspaper, which says that your, I believe that was your first book, which the thought was that it was so popular that some people recognized themselves on your first book, which is Hetman. And so I need to say that the 2010 Amazon Breakthrough Novel Award was very much attached to your creativity and your book Hetman, which very detailed expressed knowledge of Ukraine. And also, I understand that you managed to put almost in a historic progression facts which took place in a political transformation of Russia and Eastern Europe. Is that something you indeed tried to express? And what are the thoughts and directions you felt important to express in your two books?
Yeah, I'm very aware that if I write about a country that I've been to, I want to try to make it sound real or feel real to people that live there. Hetman is the first, I think, international novel that's set in Kiev, Ukraine. Now, I'd read a couple other books which have a small part in Kiev, and to be honest, they didn't ring true. They'd obviously been written by someone who'd never been to Ukraine, never been to Kiev, probably by someone who'd been to perhaps Moscow or one of the Baltic states or somewhere and just thought that Ukraine was the same. Because I'd lived there, I really had a feeling for the country. And when the Kiev Post interviewed me, the journalist there was so happy that I'd spoken about places that she knew of, and also some of the readers, the expats, because they could recognize the type of people I'd written about, they kind of said, okay, you know, that must be this person, that must be that person. And to be honest, I did base some of the characters on people I knew, but I made very certain not to use their names unless they wanted me to. I mean, a couple of characters in there, I have used names, real names of friends of mine because they wanted to be in the book, but I've made sure the character is different to them. It's kind of a pastiche, if you wish. It's kind of a caricatured version of them. But with regards to the political situation, I think Cold Black has more of the political situation than Hetman. And I wanted to try to make Ukraine seem exciting because I think people in the outside world don't know much about the country. And it is the largest European country. Some would argue that France is larger, but I think in actual fact Ukraine is of equal size, if not larger than France. And it's a country that isn't widely written about, and I wanted to make sure that my characters were three-dimensional. And my third novel, which I'm writing now, also has some scenes that take place in Ukraine. And I think that Ukraine and Kiev especially have become a real part of me, as now obviously that I've been married to my wife now since 2003. I now feel as though I have two homelands. I have the homeland of England and I have the homeland of Ukraine, and I think that I have to make sure that when I write about both of those countries, I really do try to give a fair and just worldview of them. And that's what I attempt to do in my writing.
I noticed that you call Kiev in a female, very endearing way. Is that because you just been so much taken by the city? Because in Russian Kiev, certainly a male gender, but you called it as she.
You're the second person to ask me about that. And I don't know, I've always felt that Kiev was female, because I think to me Kiev was warm and welcoming. And the founders of Kiev, it was a girl and her three brothers, and it seemed to me that Kiev always seemed very friendly, you know. I suppose because it was such such a calming place. It has so many parks, and I think more trees than any other European capital city. And you know, for me, it just seems to be a warm and friendly place. Even when it's been minus 25 and I've had to walk on the streets in snow up to my knees, it always seems to be welcoming. And I think that's why I've called it female. Maybe there's something subconscious there. Perhaps it's because that's where I found my wife, my true love. Perhaps that's why, I don't know. But to me, it's always been a female.
Well, this is certainly, I would say, very logical, emotional connection. Obviously, because you did find your wife there, but also Kiev has so many churches, and I'm just thinking, hearing you, listening to all these details and descriptions, church is she in Russian, and perhaps, mm-hmm. I should say female in Russian, and perhaps that created this very warming historic hospitality, which you felt without even speaking language. So maybe that create this feeling in you. You calling yourself Aiden Show in your Black Call book, is that correct? That's the name you go under?
Well, I think we have the line there between the author and the author's characters. Now, the main character in both Cold Black and Hetman is Aiden Snow, and Aiden Snow.
Oh, it's a Snow. My mistake. I'm sorry. It's Aiden.
That's okay. Aiden mm-hmm. Snow, and Aiden Snow. Yes, you could say he's the alter ego of Alex Shaw. In some respects, I'd like to be like him. You know, I'd like to be as fit as him. I would like to have been in the British Special Air Service, the you know, the Special Forces, or as it is in Russian, Spetsnaz. But you know, I wasn't. But he is not me. Parts of him are me because I've written the character, and obviously what he thinks about Ukraine and the things he's seen in Ukraine are what I've known, what I've seen in Ukraine. And you know, I have some sources I've used to help me write the book. People in the military and clandestine branches of government, but he isn't me. I suppose he's a version of me. Every character is a version of the author. But if you ask me which character could I identify with most, then I would say it is Aiden Snow. Yes,
because it says at some point, I don't exactly remember where, but it says that in some sense it's a mirrored experience which you had yourself. So that gave me an assumption that you want to mirror this character, maybe not exactly, but in some part which you did explain. Let me ask you one question, which is maybe part or not of your book. Mm-hmm. Russia and Ukraine used to be inseparable, and then when Ukraine separated, it created quite a complex political situation, and right now they are separate countries, but I think they trying to find some channel of communication, whether it's for political, economical reason, but culturally it is really inseparable in so many, many ways. How did you feel influence of Russia in Ukraine?
Well, when I was in Ukraine, the funny thing was, when I first went there, I would always ask, when I was teaching my students, I'd always ask them, I'd say, how do you say this word in your language? And I wouldn't say, how do you say this in Russian? Or how do you say this in Ukrainian? I would say, how do you say this in your language? And the funny thing was, about 8 out of 10 times, they would give me a Russian word. And so I think I have more Russian words than Ukrainian words. However, in the last, I suppose, four or five years, the words I've been hearing more have been Ukrainian. Now, the problem I have is that I've never sat down to learn Russian or Ukrainian. I've learned it like a parrot. You know, I've heard friends and family speak it, and I've picked up words, and I've used them. And the funny thing is, I can understand an awful lot, but when I try to speak, I don't quite have the vocabulary. So I can get by. You know, I'm not someone who can't string a sentence together, but when I speak, I kind of mix up Russian and Ukrainian. But the thing that's strange about Ukraine is that I think the country can almost be divided into two. In Western Ukraine, they're very proud of being Ukrainians, and they try to speak the Ukrainian language, whereas in Eastern Ukraine, they like to speak Russian. Now, the current president, Viktor Yanukovych, he's obviously from Donetsk, which is in Eastern Ukraine, and so he is very Russian-orientated, whereas before, Yushchenko was Ukrainian-orientated. And the funny thing is that I think about 10 years ago, maybe more, when there was a presidential election, one of the candidates was actually a friend of my wife's grandfather, a guy called Gennady Udovenko. And sometimes I think what would have happened if he'd become the president, would I have had some very, very highly placed contacts? It's quite a peculiar question to think about that. I think Russia's influence there is quite large, but I think people are people. You know, I think the Russian person in the street and the Ukrainian person in the street, I don't think they're much different. When I was in the Baltic states, the thing I found there that was quite sad was that 15, 20 years ago, they would have all spoken Russian, and now they're all relearning their own language, which is great. But the problem is that you get teenagers now who they've learned English and they've learned their own language, for example, Latvian, but they don't want to learn Russian. So you can have a situation now where you get a Latvian who wants to speak to a Lithuanian or an Estonian, but they have to speak to the Lithuanian or the Estonian in English rather than Russian. And I think what Russia did in the Soviet Union, I think what that did was, using the one language, Russian, I think they united many, many countries. Now, I think it's fantastic that all these countries are now learning their own languages and pushing their own languages, i.e. Ukrainian, Latvian, Lithuanian, Estonian. I think that's fantastic. But I think if they turn their back on the Russian language, I think they lose an awful lot of their 20th century history. I think they lose some of the glue that holds them together. So therefore, I think it's important for all these countries, Ukraine included, to learn both their mother tongue and also the tongue of the former Soviet Union, which of course is Russian.
Well, this is a very wonderful thought you express, because with all complexity of dissipating of all Russia and freedom of choice, which other Republic of Russia gained, certainly the right to speak your language and to speak it, for this reason, any language you choose, is a tremendous cultural and emotional gain of freedom. How all of this composed in the creation of your books? And if I made a very strong assumption, please correct me, but I feel that Hetman is like a first part with your thoughts, experiences, and ideas. And then Cold Black, if not direct continuation, but a second chapter of your thoughts.
I think you could say that. I think that when I lived in Kiev, I wanted to write about my experiences. And I wanted to write about my experiences in a way, in a format that people would find interesting. And I know what I like to read. I like to read, you know, the kind of thrillers, the kind of interesting military thrillers like James Bond or The Bourne Identity or Tom Clancy. And so I wanted to put down my experiences about Ukraine in a format that people would enjoy. And that's why I wrote Hetman. And I think that I'm always going to try to express what I've seen and what I've done through my writing. And so I think, yes, you can say Cold Black is a second chapter of that. And indeed, both books have many of the same characters. They can be enjoyed on their own, but I think that if you read Hetman and then Cold Black, I think you get some kind of sense of who the characters are. Of course, there are characters that appear in each book that don't appear in the others, but I do think it is a continuation, and I think I will perhaps forever be writing partly about Ukraine. Whether or not the character of Aidan Snow goes to Ukraine again in another book, I don't know. I haven't decided yet, but I do feel it is partly my duty to try to say thank you to Ukraine for the time I've spent there and also for the opportunity it's given me.
Extreme generosity, and certainly I would say unique generosity, because I would not say it is that often where a foreigner, as I mentioned in your young age, had such a profound understanding in such a quick period of time, not only foreign culture, but a totally different regime, and made it feel as if it is his own. This is tremendous talent and human intuition you have, which you expressed in a quite a subtle way in your first book, Hetman. It took you 12 years to write this book. So that was your, I would say, almost like a life meditation, because it was, in a sense, very detailed, extremely unrushed, and a very profound and a statement for yourself first, for Ukraine and Kyiv second, and for that reason for the world. Look, now your book is in the United States. So you hug all these points, being exposed to such a variety of experiences. What is the most precious point in your first book of a Hetman?
I'm not quite sure if I can talk about one particular kind of point, but I think that something that was quite amusing to me was that I lived in the very centre of Kyiv. I lived on a street called Pushkinskaya, which was named after obviously the poet Pushkin. And every morning when I woke up, I would see the roads were wet. And I think, oh, had it rained? And it hadn't rained every morning. And then I decided I'd go jogging, so I'd get fit. And then suddenly I realized that the roads were being cleaned and swept every morning. And so I used to try to have my balcony window open, and on many mornings I'd be woken up by people with twig brooms cleaning the roads. And the pavements, or in America, the sidewalks outside. And what impressed me the most was the pride these people had in keeping the city clean. And I felt honored to be there. But I think that part of my job in writing Hetman was trying to get over the stereotypical view that all Eastern Europe is Russia, and that everyone in Eastern Europe acts in a certain way. And I wanted to try to make all my characters, you know, three-dimensional, to show that they were real people. I think in the West, for a while, we had two stereotypes of the Eastern European. You know, we had the view that they were either a communist spy, or we had the view that they were, you know, the new Russian who suddenly became a billionaire overnight and was constantly buying football clubs and eating caviar, drinking champagne, etc. And so my goal was to try to write a book about real people. And In part, I think I achieved that. Obviously, it's up to the readers or the critics to say how much I achieved, but I didn't want to make it too complicated. I wanted to make it an interesting read and exciting, and hopefully I've done that. And I think that I've built upon that with Cold Black, my second book. I think that Cold Black's a much better book, I feel, because I think now I've managed to get into my own style, and I think now it's far easier for me to write.
I'd like to bridge with a second book, but I just wanted to make one point, how contrasting and how freedom of expression you achieved in your first book, because one of your major character is Bull Koshinsky, which actually is a military person, and that, I understand, relates to the name of the book itself. So if you just can conclude and make a comment how this gallery of characters truly being so expressively shown in your book with almost, I would say, realistic with no idealistic editing to it. Because book is filled with very realistic characters. There is a sense of real world, and people who never been in Kyiv would have this flavor, would have this idea, what does it mean to be in this strange part of the world?
Well, I used to get really annoyed by looking at films or reading books where the characters were two-dimensional, where the evil character was just pure evil, and the good character was just purely good. I wanted to make sure that my characters had motivations, and Bull Koshinsky, his first name is Taurus. He was obviously a Lithuanian, and part of the reason for the way he acts is because during the Soviet Union, he was in the Red Army, and he was Special Forces, so Spetsnaz, like the American Delta Force or the British SAS. He was a Special Forces captain in Afghanistan when obviously the Soviet Union invaded there in the 80s, and he was pushed into being in the army, and the army affected him. He was looked down upon by the Russians as he was Lithuanian. And his goal is now that he's left the army is to try to make something of himself. Initially, it was through selling weapons, and now he's trying to go into business. He even hints that perhaps he wants to get into politics. And the reason I used the name Hetman to be the title of the book is because Hetman was a military term for the ruler in Ukraine and Poland and parts of Lithuania several hundred years ago, and I felt as though that Koshinsky was trying to become a new hetman. He was trying to become somebody who could be a leader. Perhaps if unstopped, he could have become, a politician, a deputat in the Ukrainian government, and then perhaps maybe even the president. But he was somebody who was willing to do that by military means. And the people he surrounded himself with were also former Special Forces soldiers who had been used and were no longer wanted by their various governments. When the Soviet Union crumbled, the Red Army reduced in size drastically, and so you had many highly trained soldiers who were no longer wanted. And so these soldiers were suddenly taken by oligarchs, by mafia people, to be used as their own personal army. But here you had Koshinsky, who was being slightly noble, was trying to create his own army so that perhaps he could give these people some worth back. But of course his own view was somehow twisted, and hence he was helping others sell guns, and he was after power. And so I was trying to show how he progressed from being a bank robber to soldiers, a bank robber, to someone who was trying to go for perhaps political power, and he was working his way up. And Aidan Snow, the main character, had actually met Paschinski when Paschinski was trying to rob a bank back in the 90s. And hence now the conflict is that Snow knows who Paschinski is, where now Paschinski is now operating under a new name, the surname of Knish. So he's trying to leave his past behind and be somebody different. And of course Snow knows who he is and can take that away from him. And I wanted to make sure that the characters felt real. I wanted to make sure that they didn't just have this one-dimensional thing about them. I wanted to see them get hurt. I wanted to see them think about their lives as well. And that's what I hoped I've done. Who knows? If there's any readers out there who've read it, please drop me an email and let me know if I've achieved that.
Well, we certainly, just to take a little detour, after which we will certainly let you an opportunity to give us information where we can buy your book. But I wanted to tell you that from my own reading, it is very captivating, particularly because being a foreigner, you wrote about the world, as I mentioned before, as it was your own. And indeed, you stepped away from standard just entertaining detective book, and you brought us into the world of real people, of real characters, historic event, and yet they are part of our life. So I felt that I was present, almost being part of the events of your book. To bring the facts, please, before we will start to talk about your next book, I'd like for you to tell the listeners where indeed we can buy your book.
Well, you can get my books primarily from Amazon.com in the US or Amazon.co.uk in the UK. In fact, all the Amazon sites sell my book except for Amazon China. My book can also be bought from BarnesandNoble.com, or if you go into any Barnes & Noble store in the US, it can actually be ordered. In the UK, it can be ordered from any large bookshop. You have to go in and actually order it. They haven't got that many on display. They might have some in stock, but generally it's easier to order it. But I would say, yeah, the easiest and quickest way to get a copy of any of my books is to go through one of the Amazon sites. Of course, my books are available on Kindle. They're actually the best sellers on Kindle. Hetman became a number one bestseller in September in the UK on Kindle, and Cold Black became a number three bestseller in its first week of publication in the UK as well. They've both been top 10 bestsellers in the US on Kindle. So, yes, if there's anyone listening there who would like a copy, if they've got a Kindle, they can have it within 20 seconds. Otherwise, they'd have to order it and get it within a few days from primarily Amazon.com.
Thank you for helping me to reintroduce your accomplishments by mentioning that you are bestseller in the Kindle. I was ready to mention this making step into your second book, but I also wanted to make sure that you will make an announcement of your website, which I, in fact, took a look. It's very exciting, with a touch of abstract and artistic novelty website. So if you can give us quickly the address of your website, that would be very helpful for all of us.
Yes, of course. The website is www.alexshaw-hetman.com. The annoying thing is I wanted to have alexshaw.com, but somebody else had that. So it's alexshaw-hetman.com. It's not the best website in the world, and if there's anyone out there who wants to redesign it for me, please send me an email.
Absolutely. We certainly will use our area here with connections of our The Music Garden Company, and I personally will be very thankful to people who will give their feedback to your site and to the Amazon, and hopefully some of them will purchase your book. I like to give a few biographic details which makes you appear as extremely devoted, totally uncompromising writer, because indeed you said that if the book isn't a success, it won't stop me. I will continue because I really enjoy the process. I believe you said this regarding your first book, or was it regarding your plans for the second book?
Well, that was after I'd written the first book, and I was writing the second book, because as somebody who reads a lot of books in the genre of the men's adventure genre, you know, the Vince Flynn, the Tom Clancy, the Chris Ryan, the Andy McNab, Brad Fore, those types of books, I knew that I'd written something that I myself would like to read, and also I felt that my goal was that I would finish my book, and if nobody read it, that was fine, because I would have finished a book, and for the rest of my life I can say, yes, I've written a book. And the fact that people have read it and have enjoyed it has been a bonus. And the fact that I've had some emails from people asking me about the second book spurred me on to write it. If I wanted a get-rich scheme, I'd try to do something else. But I think that people that write purely for profit, I think their works are lackluster. They're more two-dimensional. And I think you can tell if somebody writes something that they really, really enjoyed writing. And I really have enjoyed writing my books. And I'm dedicated to writing them. That's something hopefully I'll be able to continue to do.
There is no doubt in the world's mind that you will continue doing so. And I wanted to start to talk about the main theme of your Black Hole book, which I understood has to do with a global problem of oil supply. And if you can comment on this and let us in more in your Black Hole book.
Yes, of course. The second book, which I finished writing in the summer, Cold Black, it is a continuation of Hetman in the sense that it has some of the same characters. In Cold Black, Aidan Snow has now been recruited to work directly for the British Intelligence Service, which is generally known as MI6, but the real name for it is SIS, and that's the same organization that James Bond works for, but it is a real organization. And I was trying to think of a way I could write about current affairs and also make it interesting. Now, oil prices are rising, petrol prices or gasoline prices, as they might say in the States, are rising as well. And I was thinking, okay, what would affect these prices? And of course, if there was some kind of problem in the Middle East affecting supply, then obviously the prices would go sky high. Now that led me to think, okay, who would affect the prices in the Middle East? Well, perhaps terrorists might affect the prices. Al Qaeda might affect the prices. Then I thought, okay, well, what if the Middle East can no longer supply oil, who can? And obviously the United States has a large supply of oil, but also something that not many people know or is not very widespread is that Russia has the world's largest supply of untapped oil just waiting to be pumped out of the ground in certain parts of the country. They've struck oil recently and 10 years ago, and they've now verified this. And so in a few years' time, perhaps 10 years' time, oil will be coming primarily from Middle East and Russia. Now, so part of my idea is, okay, is Russia happy to wait for 10 years for their oil to be bought by many people? And perhaps the answer to that is no. So that's what got me thinking. And so in Cold Black, I've written about other countries that I've been to and worked in. I've worked in Saudi Arabia. I've worked in, obviously, Ukraine. I've been to Dubai. I've been to the States. Obviously, I've been to London. So I've written about countries I've been to. And hopefully I've tried to give as a detailed description of those new countries as I have of Ukraine. And we'll have to wait and see. Cold Black is doing quite well, and in my mind, it's a more developed book than Hetman is, because I think the crisis, the action, I think, is on a much larger scale.
The issue here, of course, is such that you have almost like a double life, because you have this graft into you, as I mentioned in the beginning of the program, roots, culture, and all understanding of your own country. And then when you so naturally nurtured into the foreign world and you created this incredible diffusion between all these elements, that really creates this unique creation and unique way of your sharing your own understanding, your own conceptualizing of the world today, whether you're talking about the oil or you're talking about some other political issues. I did not even mention that you had a consultancy as a business regarding, I believe, some suggestions or recruiting in Eastern European country. You just mentioned that you've been writing about the countries you visited. So I find that your writing is not just beautiful literature, but it's extremely relevant, almost like a necessity from your own standpoint of view, who did experience at first hand different cultures, different political challenges, and generously share it with someone who didn't have this opportunity and who perhaps will have this privilege to read your book and make his or her own assumption. So your statement in the world is quite tremendous.
Well, thank you for that. That's a great compliment. I always like to write about places I've been to and things I've experienced, and I have been very, I'm trying to think of the word here, very kind of fortunate in the fact that I've had the chance to travel. I know a couple of years ago I was traveling most weeks. I think I went to 13 countries in that year. It doesn't sound like much, but I think I was in each country for a week and a half or 2 weeks, so I was out quite a lot. And for me, it's always interesting going to new places. And as a child growing up, I always really liked travel shows. And I suppose that's why I like to go to places. But I think if you read about travel books, they're kind of quite boring. You know, they just talk about the place, but nothing really happens. And so that's why I like to set my books in places I've been to, so I can kind of have the action happening, but also mention the place itself. For example, in Cold Black, I talk about the Atlantis Hotel in Dubai, which is just being built, I think, for 2 years. And I was in Dubai just before it opened. And I think my book's the first book in the world to talk about the Atlantis Hotel. And it's indeed the first book in the world to have some of the action happening in the Atlantis Hotel. So I don't know whether the hotel's happy about this, but if they'd like to order some, I'll sign some copies for them. And so I like to write about new things that are happening. And I do feel it's my duty, in a sense, to actually write about places for people. people that can't go there. But, you know, my view of the world is my view. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's my personal view, and people are obviously entitled to either accept it or disagree. But I just hope that those people that do buy my books do enjoy what they read, and I'm always happy to hear feedback from my readers about this.
And you certainly will have this feedback and pick up on your thought whether people agree or not agree. I will find irrelevant, because the most important what you are providing is expansion of the mind, of the knowledge, of thinking. You're trying to kill stereotype thinking as much as you can, for which I salute you, I congratulate you. And the fact that you are the author, thinker, and also very progressive, independent interpreter of very different culture and political regime make you absolutely unique. And I wanted to conclude our program by wishing you the most of the spiritual and intellectual stamina, because you have a lot to say, and there are a lot of ears and minds who are preparing to read your wonderful books. So I would thank you, my very special guest, Alex Show, and I hope that we will speak next time about his next book. And if you want to add something, Alex, I certainly will give you this opportunity before concluding my memorable interview with you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Lena, for taking the time to speak to me. Spasibo gromny, as they say in Russian, or duzhidaku, as they say in Ukrainian. It's been nice to talk to you. I won't try and speak any more Russian. I don't want to embarrass myself. But thank you very much, and it's been a great pleasure just to speak to you. And I hope that if any of my readers are out there, or if any of the audience become readers, please do feel free to send me an email, or to follow me on Twitter, or to get in contact with me. If you've got any ideas, anything you'd like to see in my next novel, please let me know. I write to entertain, and if I've entertained you, that's great. If not, well, let me know why. So once again, thank you very much, and until we meet again, they say in Russian, пока.
Спасибо, пока, до встречи, and on all this melange language symphony, I will conclude my program, which I dedicated to very special writer, thinker, I would say very wonderful person, Alex Show. And I will thank BBS for giving us another opportunity. We have another interview, another memorable program. And on this note, I would say again, that was your Lena Lai.